I'll be reading from Job chapter 1, verses 1 through 5. In the land of Uz, there lived a man whose name was Job. This man was blameless and upright. He feared God and shunned evil. He had 7 sons and 3 daughters, and he owned 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 yoke of oxen, and 500 donkeys. He had a large number of servants. He was the greatest man among all the people of the East. His sons used to take turns holding feasts in their homes, and they would invite their 3 sisters to eat and drink with them. When a period of feasting had run its course, Job would send and have them purified. Early in the morning, he would sacrifice burnt offerings for each of them, thinking, "Perhaps my children have sinned and cursed God in their hearts." This was Job's regular custom.
In 1966, President Johnson signed into a law a bill designating Father's Day as the 3rd Sunday in June. It seems like that should have happened a long time ago. In fact, though, the effort actually began in 1909. Sonora Dodd was in a Mother's Day worship service when she decided that she wanted to work for a similar effort for fathers. Mrs. Dodd wanted to honor her father because after her mother's death, her father had parented her by himself. He had raised her with selfless, unconditional love. In the process of that, she came to understand that her father had made great personal sacrifices. I suspect that her father did not think of himself as having sacrificed anything. I suspect that he believed that what he had done solely out of love for his daughter. The word sacrifice comes from 2 French words. Together they mean making something sacred. Sacrifice means an offering to a deity for the purposes of homage or honor. It also means giving up something valued for the sake of something of greater value or more pressing claim. Both of those definitions are involved in Job chapter 1 and verses 1 through 5. The second definition is directly related to the first definition. In this passage, verse 4 says that Job's sons took turns holding feasts in their home. They invited their 3 sisters to join them in the eating and drinking that went on. My impression is that they had those feasts often, that they may have become drunk at times in the course of those feasts, and that when they were drunk, they didn't know what they were doing or saying. It seems that Job may have cared more about their well-being and their relationship to God than they did. I wonder if they ever sacrificed for themselves just in case. But Job took no chances. He sacrificed offerings to God on behalf of his children for sins they might have committed without knowing it. Why did he do that? Verse 1 tells us why. It says he did this because this man was blameless and upright. He feared God and he shunned evil. One biblical scholar has made this observation. Job, like the patriarchs, functioned as a priest for his family. He took his sacrificial obligation seriously, viewing it as an atonement for sin. To Job, this included even sins of the heart, because he made special offerings just in case his sons had secretly cursed God. Job did this not out of any sense of obligation, but out of a sense of love for his children. And this points to the idea of fathers taking spiritual leadership in their families. A father who really cares about the welfare of his children and cares about his own relationship to God as well as theirs, learns God's will. He makes a point of that. In fact, he devotes himself to learning God's will so that he can first exemplify it, and second, so that he can teach it. Teach it to his family, teach it to his children in particular. Teach them God's will for their lives as well as for his own life. He makes spiritual sacrifices both for his sake and for the sake of his family. He learns what God considers acceptable spiritual sacrifices so that his sacrifices accomplish the purposes for which he gives them. And he learns when and how to offer those sacrifices. Now, those sacrifices are not at all the same that went on in the Old Testament, because we have one who sacrificed once and for all time for all sins, for all people, and that is Christ Jesus, God's Son. But there are other kinds of sacrifices, spiritual sacrifices, or sacrifices that have spiritual purposes that fathers have been making ever since. In his book, Father Need, Kyle Pruitt puts these sacrifices into concrete terms for us. He says, "What I mean by fathering is involved fathering. This is male behavior beyond insemination that promotes the well-being and the healthy development of one's child and family in active ways." He describes everyday characteristics of that as these things: feeling and behaving responsibly toward one's child, being emotionally engaged, being physically accessible, providing material support to sustain his children's needs, and exerting influence in child-rearing decisions. When we fathers think about what each of these are actually asking of us, we realize that we're being asked to sacrifice personally. Remember the second definition of sacrifice? Giving up something valued for the sake of something of greater value or more pressing claim. We joke a lot today, or we exaggerate a lot today, about those things that we call sacrifices. And oftentimes the things that we call sacrifices are really not sacrifices at all, are they? They're really things of little significance. They're things that are of luxury to us. They're things that are of comfort to us. But they're not really sacrifices. Because a sacrifice has to do with something that's extremely important and valuable and necessary. And so when we think of sacrifice in its true sense, we have to think about sacrifice as this definition goes: giving up something that we value for the sake of something of greater value or pressing claim. So what might those sacrifices be? Our God-given responsibility as fathers is to shape our children into adults. Adults who love and who obey God. God says in Malachi 2:15 that he seeks godly offspring. What can be more valuable to a Christian father than to raise godly offspring? What is the one thing that more than anything else grieves a Christian father than to have his children grow up and not be godly? The Old Testament gives a lot of detail, a lot of teaching about how fathers are to raise their children to be godly offspring, to love God and to obey God, to fear God and to shun evil like Job did. The New Testament takes all of that into account as background, as something that it assumes that we've already studied and that we already have taken to heart and that we're already putting into action. And so it shrinks down all of that into two rather terse phrases. Phrases that are commands to fathers who are Christian fathers. One is this: fathers, do not exasperate your children. Instead, bring them up in the training and instruction of the Lord. The other is, fathers, do not embitter your children, or they will become discouraged. It gives us both the attitude and the actions that need to be at the heart of what we're about, we who are Christian fathers. It suggests, by way of implication, that if we do these things, that we will raise our children to be godly offspring. You know, it's interesting that when you stop and think about what those verses say, what their focus and intention is, and when you go back and you look at the Old Testament and you see the detail given about what the focus is of godly fathers in terms of teaching their children, there's quite a variance between what we find there versus what seems to be the focus in modern American life as fathers. We find ourselves really being very much caught up in the culture of our times, don't we? There's so many things that we feel like our children need to be involved in and have access to and be trained in. And we spend a lot of money, and they spend a lot of time in those efforts. And those efforts have value. But the real question becomes for you and I who are Christian fathers: do we spend as much or more time focusing on the things that the Bible tells us we ought to, as we do these things that are influencing us in our culture? Are we raising children who are truly godly offspring? Or do they have just a passing knowledge of what godliness is about? Sometimes we can be very godly people in and of ourselves, and yet somehow we've not communicated that adequately to our children. And that's nothing new, is it? You can go back to 1 Samuel and look at a good and godly man by the name of Eli. It's hard to find a better man. Apparently, God found no better man because he wanted Samuel to be raised by Eli, to be influenced and be taught by Eli. He wanted Eli's example on Samuel. But Eli didn't do too good a job with his own sons. And interestingly enough, Maybe because of that influence, Samuel repeated the very same thing. Samuel, this good and godly prophet and priest of God, his own children were spiritual disasters. So we can't take any of these things for granted, can we? We can't assume that because we are devoted to God, that our children will automatically be devoted to God. We can't assume that because we bring them to Bible classes and to church all the time for the first 18 years of their lives, that they're automatically going to share the devotion that we have for God, that they're going to share the values we have in godliness, that they're going to be people who are committed to God their entire life, that they're going to be active members of Christ's body, the church. It takes our teaching, our prayers, our sacrifices. These pointed instructions that we find given in the New Testament demands self-sacrifice. A Christian father must see spending time with his children as important. And he must see his role as vital to the well-being of his children. Some of the sacrifices that a father must make will include things like sacrificing time for himself. And I don't mean every moment of time, but time that could be better spent and must be spent with his children. Time away from television, time away from the computer, time away from reading for his own desires when he could be and needs to be spending time with his children. Time that's involved with anything that dad cannot do with his children and his spouse. It means sacrificing jobs and income which demand extra hours away from family. And that may involve long commutes and jobs which own you. You know, there are folks who want a better quality of life for their children and their families as a whole. And they want to be able to afford a home somewhere, a house somewhere that they can really make a home. But oftentimes today, that means that they are living in a place that's 2 hours commute each way from their jobs. They're away from their homes often 12 to 14 hours a day. What kind of energy do they have left to be with their family when all of that is accomplished? And what is it to have a job that owns you? Years ago, my wife worked in management for Pacific Bell in Northern California. She said it was a great company to work for in so many ways because when they hired you, they trained you and they continued to train you. And if you did well, they continued to promote you. But with each promotion, they owned more and more and more of you. She was working 12 hours a day in a computer changeover. And her boss, a new boss, scheduled she and her crew of about 40 people to work 8 hours a day on Saturday on top of Monday through Friday. And then, because it wasn't going quickly enough, he said, "You're going to schedule your people to work Sundays as well." And she said, "No, I'm not. My people have families, they have children, they have lives." And she said, "And on Sunday, I'm going to be in church." She resigned. When she turned in her resignation, they gave her a 25% increase in pay to stay. And she said thank you and took it until she resigned. Betty said that when you worked for that company, the higher up you went, the more they felt they owned you. That's not the only company. That's not the only way that a company can own you. It may show up in a variety of ways. But how much do we have left after that? How much of us remains? Sacrifice that we make as fathers may involve exchanging more and better things for more quantity and quality of time with our children. It may be involved in minimizing both our mental and our emotional overload that leaves little of us for our families. And it may involve cutting down on our involvements or absolutely doing away with our involvements in organizations or activities which take time away from family that needs to be with our family. Now, sometimes Christian fathers need to moderate their involvement even in church activities if they cannot involve their families with them. I once ran into a man who was very devoted to the church. He had been a deacon in the church and was extremely committed to the Lord's work, but he almost lost his older teenage son because he spent so much time doing church work that he spent almost no time with his son. But he learned from it. He pulled back and he drew in his family. And they came to understand his devotion as they grew in theirs. We who are Christian fathers must remember that love is not self-seeking. And selfish ambition is an act of the sinful nature. So when we think of this matter of sacrificing for our children, self-sacrifice, we need to really ask ourselves, is this that I'm doing in the name of my children, my family, really for them, or is it for me? William Leakey remarked that self-sacrifice is the most conspicuous element of a virtuous and religious character. When Job sacrificed for his children, he gave up something he valued for something of greater value and more pressing claim. And that was his children's relationship to God. And so it is that self-sacrificial fathers deserve our honor. When I gather with a family a day or two or three before a funeral, if it's been a man, and I ask them about his life, and about what he did, and about their relationship with him, the things that they remember the most, the things that bring them the greatest joy, invariably, it is the man, the father, who is not involved in all kinds of things in the community. He was the father who was involved with his children. He was the father who coached or helped his kids in sports. He was the father who coached or helped his kids in scouts. It was the father who spent time with them, nurturing them, being with them, enjoying being with them, playing with them, teaching them, being a shoulder to them, being a guide to them. It was the father who was there for them. There was another father who sacrificed for children with whom he wants to have a relationship. That father is God. And we are the children for whom he gave the supreme sacrifice. Romans chapter 3, verses 21 through 26 opens up what that sacrifice was and why he gave it. But now a righteousness from God, apart from the law, has been made known, to which the law and the prophets testify. This righteousness from God comes through faith in Jesus Christ to all who believe. There is no difference, for all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God, and are justified freely by his grace through the redemption that came by Christ Jesus. God presented him as a sacrifice of atonement through faith in his blood. He did this to demonstrate his justice. Because of his forbearance, he had left the sins committed beforehand unpunished. He did it to demonstrate his justice at the present time, so as to be just and the one who justifies those who have faith in Jesus. As a loving father, Job conscientiously sacrificed to God for the spiritual well-being of his children. But before making those sacrifices to God for his children, Job had sacrificed himself to God. That's why he cared about his children. That's why he was devoted to God and to God's will in his children's lives. That's why he didn't want to take any chances with his children's relationship to God. That's why, just in case, he sacrificed to God. Have you sacrificed yourself to God? Have you put your faith in Jesus only to atone for your sins? I hope you have. I hope that amongst our fathers today, everyone can be called by their children a sacrificial father, one who put things of this earth, things of power and prestige and all other reasons, second to their family. If you've not been such a person in your relationship to God, if you've not sacrificed yourself to Him, I urge you today, don't wait any longer, but come forward right now as we stand and sing this song.